Talking with the Experts.
Welcome to Talking with the Experts, where we believe that success is a journey, and every journey is easier with help from friends. That's why we bring you top-notch experts and real business heroes eager to share their lessons from the road to success. We delve into new topics each week: effective marketing strategies, innovative problem solving, financial planning, and team building. We tackle everything you need to know to grow your business and keep it thriving. Whether you dream about launching your first startup or a business veteran looking to shake things up, we've got you covered. With each episode, you'll gain knowledge, boost your confidence, and be inspired to take action. So, grab a coffee, make yourself comfortable, and join our exciting journey. You're not alone in this. We're here, guiding you, cheering for you, and celebrating each milestone. Let's turn your business dreams into reality, starting today. Here is your host, Rose Davidson.
Talking with the Experts.
In episode 504, Ron Sturz shares with us his thoughts on the rest of the story about market crashes, inflation, and what will happen in the future.
Talking with the Experts.
Talking with the Experts is all about business, by business owners, for business owners. You can find it on all good podcasting streaming platforms and on YouTube. Today, my guest is Ron Sturz, and Ron is going to be telling us the rest of the story. Can't wait for him to tell me what that's all about. And Ron is a serial entrepreneur who's currently focused on target date funds, and we'll learn a little bit more about that as well. Welcome, Ron, and thank you for joining me yet again on Talking with the Experts.
Thank you. It's great to be here again.
So tell me a little bit more about your history, Ron.
Sure. So maybe start with my education. I have two master's degrees, one in applied mathematics and the other in finance, master's in finance and a master's in applied mathematics. And my first job was with Northrop here in the United States. And I learned a lesson for those of you, I think you want to go in engineering. I worked on the job for about a year, and then my boss came and he said, so that project is done. You need to go find another funded project. Basically, you need to roam the halls and find someone who's got a project that they'll use you to work on. So I changed careers and went to work for a pension consulting firm here in the U.S. that in its day had more consulting business and all the competitors combined. That you would not have heard of them in Australia, but so that I sort of learned pension consulting, and I had the degrees to the education to do that, and that pretty much been on my own for. So I went on my own in 1985. So that's almost 40 years I've been on my own now. Yeah, it's just been fun. I semi-retired maybe 15 years ago. We moved from Chicago to California. And then I'm not really retired because I would be bored if I were. Mm-hmm. So, and so for people who are, you know, considering retirement, my sister and I started something 2 years ago called the Baby Boomer Investing Show. And several of the episodes are sort of about retirement happiness. Of course, most of them are about how to invest your money, but we've done 35 podcasts like the one we're doing right now. So we're not competing with you, I don't think. But, so that's been part of my hobby, is to do these podcasts with my sister.
Yeah,
and to develop designs and work in the area of target date funds, which I understand you have in Australia.
Hmm. Yeah, can you explain what they are?
Sure. So the idea, actually, they were first introduced for college savings plans. And what they do is I would even use college savings plans as an example. So when you first buy them, let's say you're buying them for your child, and they're now 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So in 7 or 8 years, they're going to be going to college. So they start up pretty aggressive, but as that date gets closer, they get more defensive because you're going to need that money to pay for the college. So the idea was extended here in the United States, and I think it's caught on. I know it's caught on in Australia because I'm talking to someone in Australia about working together. Now, let me tell you, I have to write it down so I make sure I know they're called Future Wealth Planners. And
Ah,
they're in
yes.
Western Australia. Do you know them?
I haven't heard of them, but yes, I know. I understand the concept, yes.
Okay, so it's there. And here in the United States, the Pension Protection Act of 2006 sort of declared certain ways to invest for people who cannot make their own decisions. And I know you have that there. So there's people who, have no financial education at all. So they're in savings plans, but they're not capable and really don't want to make investment decisions. So here, the Pension Protection Act declared three what is called qualified default investment alternatives. They're QDIA. One of them was a target date fund, which prior to that had really only been used for college savings. The other QDIA is a balanced account. And the third one is what's called a managed account. And you've got all of those in Australia. So I don't know if you went to school on us or what, or came up there independently, but those are definitely all in Australia as well. By far, the most popular choice here has been the target date fund. So when a new employee comes in and he's young, it's invested fairly aggressively. For the employee who's getting close to retirement, it gets safer. But what I've been crusading for here for a pretty long time, the mutual fund companies use this structure of a target date fund to offer their products. So most of them are what called proprietary. So all of the underlying investments are from that one company. And they've also, in my opinion, taken way too much risk for people near retirement,
Yeah, we
because
call it
managing.
superannuation funds here.
Yes, I know, right.
So just
Yeah,
for
and
that
that.
audience who weren't clear on that, especially the ones that don't live in the US, so superannuation funds, and I do agree, they do take a lot of risk with our funds at nearing retirement rather than keeping it more balanced, I think.
Right. So I'm trying to change that, and that's why I'm having conversations with people in your country. But I've managed target date funds here since 2007, and my design is very protective at the target date, very defensive. And over the last 13 years, that has not been very competitive because the last 13 years have been terrific stock markets here. So but I'm still running money for a union who appreciates the story of not losing people's money. So I still have a live track record and everything else. But what's gone on here, I know we want to talk about other things, but thanks for inviting me to talk about target date funds. We're having sort of two things going on. One is the target date fund industry here is definitely an oligopoly. It's $3.5 trillion, a lot of money. Just three firms manage 70% of those assets: Vanguard, Fidelity, and T. Rowe Price. And I know those firms are there in your country too, so they're everywhere. And they're fine firms, but they're taking a lot of risk for people near retirement. And I think the next market crash is going to really show how risky that is. But the thing that's starting to go on here is competitors have come to market with a solution to the one size fits all problem. The target date funds are the same for everybody. They come to market with what's coming to be known as personalized target date accounts. And I've developed my own series of personalized target date accounts. And I think that's going to catch on. But remember, there's an oligopoly there. So innovations generally don't catch on right away when an
No, they
oligopoly is
don't.
involved. So
No.
this is just starting to happen here, but there's general acknowledgement that one size fits all is not a good thing. So I introduced a product called Soteria, Soteria. And I chose that name because Soteria is the goddess of deliverance from harm. And what I want to do is protect people. So that's my story. I don't know if any people listening in Australia would want to use my design and work with me to offer it to Australian people. But
I think it's
that's
a great innovation, Ron.
I'm really proud of the design. And the problem I've got is I'm just one guy. So getting that story out there is just going to take a long time. But that's what I'm doing here.
Right.
Then the rest of the story, there's a very popular radio show here in the 1980s, 1990s. And I named the article after that because the idea of the rest of the story was I'm going to tell you stuff that you're not hearing on the regular radio channels. So part of that story and the article, by the way, I wrote that about 3 years ago now. So what I say there and in my book is when people tell you it's different this time, it almost never is. Really, think about it. But
it's just
3 years ago,
something that's already out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's a long history of capital markets and, you know, investing and everything else. But 3 years ago, and actually, it's still pretty much the same today in terms of the stock market. Our stock market was in a bubble 3 years ago, and still is. And it's a bubble that was never inflated as much by a whole list of measures. So the price earnings ratios here have never been higher. And the idea of a price earnings ratio is what do you pay for a dollar's worth of earnings? Right now, that's at about 35. The history of price earnings ratios is below 20 here. So a very expensive market. Warren Buffett has a measure that has predicted stock market crashes in the past, and it's the ratio of the value of the stock market to gross domestic product, GDP. And that's running at about 160%. So the stock market is worth more than what this country produces each year.
Mm.
So that's very, very high. Now there's a whole series of other measures. So that's one of the things that's different this time. The other thing that's different this time, it was 3 years ago, and that's changing here for sure. Interest rates were never lower. And you look at the 100-year history of interest rates in the United States, and zero is as low as it's ever been. It's never been zero before. Now, technically, it was at 0.5%, but that's zero.
Mm.
So now our central bank, called the Federal Reserve, has been raising interest rates to try to fight inflation.
Yeah, and we're the same. We're about 4.1% now.
Yeah, I saw that.
Cash
rate,
yeah.
Yeah, and we're around 4 or 5%, depending on how you measure it. But so their goal is to keep inflation at 2%.
Mm.
That feeds into the third thing that's never been the same, even though, you know, most of the time we say it's different this time. Our country has never printed so much money in such a short period of time, ever, not even close. So when the recession happened here in 2008, the powers that be decided that they could spend their way out of it. And they started this thing called quantitative easing. I don't know if that happened in your country or not.
No.
But quantitative easing was basically just manipulating bond prices. And that's what started the whole recent decline in interest rates. So the Federal Reserve buys bonds in order to keep interest rates suppressed and low. And that's called quantitative easing. That costs about $5 trillion. By the way, what it costs this country in current dollars for all of World War II, the very expensive war, $4.5 trillion. So that quantitative easing is spending more than we spent on all of World War II.
Wow.
Then we spent another $5 trillion on COVID. This country spent more as a percent of gross domestic product than any other country. And a lot of that was pork. Now, we all got checks here. And $1 trillion of that $5 trillion went to citizens. The other $4 trillion went, some of it went to good causes, but most of it went to pet projects. So our politicians like to spend money.
Oh, yeah, of course they do. It's
And
not theirs, just it's not, they don't need to worry about whose pockets affected by it.
well, and advice, it gets votes.
Of course
So
it
no,
does.
it's been crazy. So recently we had another $3 trillion on an infrastructure project. So we're at about $15 trillion in a very short period of time. That's never happened before. Never, ever, not even close. So the last thing that's happening here that's never happened before is what's called the wealth divide, and it's very real. And the difference between the wealthy people and the poor is huge now. It's probably not as bad as India, for example, but it's causing a lot of social unrest here. So we've had very popular cities like San Francisco is now, downtown's been taken over by the poor people and tent cities and stuff like that. So things are, America is a great country, but there's a lot of things that were different 3 years ago. The only thing that's really changed is that we're raising the interest rates, so they're not zero anymore. In terms of the bubble in stocks, our stock market was down 18% last year. Yours is only down at 5. I'm not sure why, but maybe you know. But anyway,
No, I don't know. No, I don't follow the stock market at all,
yeah, I just
honestly.
looked it up. Actually, you were down 6% last year, and so far you're up 3% this year, so you got a lot of that back. We were down 18% last year. We're up at 16% so far this year. Now, normally you would think the difference between 18 and 6 would be 2%, but it's not. Losses really hurt more than gains. So the bottom line just works out. The math works out. We're even though we're down 18 and up 16, we're down 5 for a year and a half. That's still a bubble. The stock prices are still very, very high.
They are very high, and it's difficult to get into the stock market if you like a mum and dad investor, because it's just expensive to buy shares now.
Well, no, at this stage, you probably aren't doing yourself a favor to buy stocks because they bubbles burst.
Yes, it's
So,
volatile, and that's the trouble with superannuation funds, is that they put a lot of the funds into the stock market rather than in other safe options.
that's true. So that's why I want to work with you all, well, with that one planner, and maybe we could help change some of that. But I think these changes in terms of retirement investing are going to be motivated by the next crash. And I don't wish that on anybody, but I just can't see how this bubble can last much longer.
No, and I think the recession's going to come sooner rather than later. As much as the governments are trying to stave it off, it's going to happen, because you can't just keep spending money all the time.
It's true. It the cause and effect between stock market crashes and recessions, I think, are is interesting. So the common belief was that stock market crashes are in anticipation of recession. But there's a fairly well-known professor here, Dr. Robert Haugen, who wrote several books. But one of the books was the Great Depression, that the stock market crash in 1929 did not predict the depression, it caused the depression. And that's sort of an interesting concept. So what he's basically saying is, so the rich people got really poor and the poor people, got poorer. And that was the cause for the depression. So we might see that happen again. I don't know how bad the next crash is going to be, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's going to be quite devastating. It's going to be worse than 2008, I think.
I think so too. So
I think
the last
it's
year
going
was
to
a
be
little head fake.
devastating.
Yeah, I think that's a real possibility. This is not wine, by the way.
Oh, damn. We could have a coffee wine party.
There you go. I could have put this in the coffee cup too. No, this is soft drink.
Never mind.
Now, the other rest of the story is we have now what's called an inverted yield curve. So interest on near-term bonds is more than interest on longer bonds. And that's going on because investors expect the Federal Reserve to do what's called a pivot. So they will stop raising interest rates. And that's not a pivot yet. A pivot is when they actually go back in and manipulate bond yields down again, presumably towards zero. That happened here in 2013. It was called the taper tantrum. So in 2013, the Federal Reserve didn't actually raise interest rates. They just stopped buying bonds to keep prices down. So that part of it, just that alone, caused the stock market to start going down. And the cause and effect there is a lot of the justification for the current bubble is that because interest rates are so low, the discounted present value of the future earnings stream is very high. Okay, so you're trying to value a firm and you forecast its earnings, then you bring it back to today. If the interest rates you're using to do that is low, it's just almost just a pure sum of those future earnings. And that becomes the fair value of the firm. If you increase that discount rate, then the fair value goes down and people will pay less for the stock. So that's what happened in 2013, and the Fed backed off. So it went back to manipulating bond prices. When it does that, it's got to print money. Some when the mechanics for printing money here are really sort of weird, but so the Treasury issues the bonds. And if there's enough taker, they clear the market at a reasonable rate. But if you want to keep that rate down, the only way to do that is to have someone be willing to pay more than they're worth. And that's what the Federal Reserve does. So printing money here isn't running the printing press. It's the Treasury issuing money, issuing bonds, and the Federal Reserve buying those. The Federal Reserve balance sheet before 2008, when the quantitative easing happened, was less than $1 trillion. Now it's $8 trillion. So the Federal Reserve owns all these bonds that they paid too much for. And just think about that.
Yes,
So,
gotta be it's gotta can't be good for the economy.
something's going to break if the if they not even raise interest rates, but stop manipulating the bond prices and let bonds go to, their fair economic value. Historically, bond prices here, anyway, bond yields here, have averaged 3% above the rate of inflation. So that's when things aren't being manipulated. If we got 5% inflation, just for sake of, let's say, yeah, to 5%, let's stick there. Bond yields would go to 8%, unmanipulated. Right now, I'm doing a lot of math here, but I can tell you're following along, so let's keep going there. Our national debt it was 30, now it's already $33 trillion. When interest rates are low, the interest on that is about 2%, so $660 billion. At 8%, we're talking about 2.4 trillion, a little over $2 trillion. The tax revenues here, this is going to surprise you. Our tax revenues are about 3.5 trillion. So if we need to spend 2.5 trillion of that 3.5 trillion on just interest on the bonds, we can't pay for Social Security. We can't pay for
No.
Medicare. We can't pay for military work.
Now that's why he brought that thing in a few months ago, to get more money in the got
Taxes
more
to raise
money
the
released,
taxes.
yeah.
Yeah, he's trying to raise the taxes on the wealthy, but he could tax them 100%, wouldn't make up.
No.
It's too big of a gap. So somewhere in there, and I'm not sure what's going to trigger it. This will take a while, by the way. So interest rates won't go from roughly zero to 6, 7, 8% overnight. But if we're tracking towards using up more and more of the tax receipts to pay the interest, that's going to mean other spending has to be changed.
Yeah,
and that will create pressure.
Yeah, we're a little bit in here too, that you know, with the interest rate rises, it's really hurting mortgage holders. And their cost of living is huge. And, you know, some people are just scraping by just so they can pay their mortgage. And a lot of people are losing their homes. It's going back to the 80s when, you know, the banks foreclosed on a lot of, and we were doing 18% on our mortgages then. And now they're only like 4.5%, 5%. Honestly, I mean, but it went from like 1% or something, you know, and we've just had every month had progressive 0.25 basis points in, you know, rises, and it hurts people because wages aren't going up.
We all got used to really low interest rates. The inflation that we got here originally was caused by COVID, actually. So there's demand pull and cost push inflation. Because we had supply shortages, you probably saw the cargo ships sitting in the ocean for months and months. That caused demand pull inflation. And that's, I think, is why originally our government told us that it was transitory, because they saw just the demand pull part of it. But printing $15 trillion is cost push. So I think we're all sort of in a mindset that, you know, interest rates going from 0 to 5% is catastrophic. But, you know, relative to all the money printing and everything else, that's, we're probably going to look at the day sometime and say, wow, remember when it used to be just 5?
Yeah.
And then that this is going to hurt mortgages and home buying and everything else. So I know I'm being, no, very negative here, but I think these are real concerns. And then the last thing that I wrote in the article about the rest of the story, I created a little mind game to just have people think about. And I'll share this with you. And it's a real stretch, but there's a TV show that I think actually started in England. It's called The Hustle. Did it play in Australia?
It was a
TV series. Okay. So it's basically about these group of hustlers, and they're really a lot of fun. You get to like them a lot. And the hustle has a template that they always use. And the first thing they got to do is they got to find a mark. And every episode of the series has this. So they find a mark that you really don't like. And he's always rich. And he's just a really terrible person. And they find something that will hook him. And so he might like to gamble, or he might do this or that, but or whatever. So some scheme that they're going to show him that gets him to buy into the con. It's just, by the way, they have terms too. They have a long con, which takes a while, and a short con that they'll do some smaller things while they're financing the long con. So they've got to come up with some money, because the first trick is to invest in the fraud alongside of the mark. So they put some money in, the mark put some money in, not that much, and the gimmick works. There's a big payoff. So now they've got this mark's interest. Then comes an event, and they got to create some irresistible reason to put in a whole lot of money. And that's the close. So they get the con or the mark to put in a lot of money, and they close and they disappear. And so every episode is like that. You sort of get rooting for the con men, the hustlers, because hey, he's a bad guy. He deserves to lose his money. So now I built that structure. I think China would love to see the United States not have the world's reserve currency. The U.S. dollar has stood up fairly well, and people call it the cleanest shirt in the laundry basket, because all the other countries have spent a lot of money, but the dollar has stood up pretty well. If China could get status as the reserve currency, that would be huge for them. It would really, their economy already is, and by some measures, larger than the United States economy. So here's what I think might be something that's going on. And by the market never knows. At the very end, they might realize that they've been conned, but then it's too late. The guys are gone. So the hook for our politicians is to spend a lot of money to get votes. So how do they do that? Well, COVID? Where did COVID start?
No one really knows.
Well, it started in China for sure. How it started is what is sort of debatable. So maybe that was a way to get America to spend a lot of money. Then China's pretty well hooked up with Russia, I think. And now we're spending, it's north of $500 billion sending to Ukraine. So they're getting us to devalue our currency. And, you know, I think if we keep doing that, we're going to go the way of Venezuela and Argentina, very healthy countries, very successful, that just let their spending get out of hand. So that's the last thing in the rest of the story. I think this could be the inscrutable Chinese leading us down a path where we no longer have the reserve currency, because we've spent an outrageous amount of money. So that's everything in the article.
Right. Well, it's
pretty cheery, right?
Oh no, not. No, I don't look forward to the coming months, and you know, next 12 months. I think it's going to be quite difficult for all of us.
Yeah, it's going to be a real challenge. Some of the stuff I've written about how to protect yourself, there are things you can do. But one of my favorite articles is what can you invest in when stocks won't work and bonds won't work? There's a lot of stuff. So, you can actually even go to the extreme and you can bet on decreases in stock and bond values. There are instruments out there that let you make that bet. The purest one is if you want to hold your stocks, but you want to buy insurance, you buy a put. You know, people are afraid of options, but a put option is insurance. And you can buy puts. So this is something to share with your audience. If you share my concerns, I can tell you that I started being concerned like this 3 years ago, and buying protection. And like any insurance, it didn't pay off. So that the cost of that insurance has been wasted. But you buy the insurance for the possibility that bad things can happen.
Yeah, that's what we have insurance for.
Yep.
Anyway, Ron, well, people can find you at targetdatesolutions.com if they want to find out more about you.
Sure.
and read your articles. And yep. I think, you know, we just all have to weather the storm, as it were, and, you know, hope for the best.
It'll pass.
Yeah, and just...
it will pass. The reason
eventually. It's going to take a while. I don't think it's going to... It's not all doom and gloom, you know. There's always a rainbow at the end, isn't there?
There is. That's the reason I started reaching out to baby boomers. I am a boomer.
All right, Ron, it's been a pleasure.
I was just going to say, boomers probably don't have the time to recover from the next crash. So they're in a bad situation. Anyway, I appreciate this. Thanks, Rose.
That's all right. I'll talk to you again soon, Ron. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Bye now.
You've been listening to Talking with the Experts, hosted by Rose Davidson. Make sure you have a look at our back catalogue over at talkingwiththeexperts.com. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss out on any episode. We look forward to your company next time. Talking with the Experts.